I'm Norma Jean. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Norma
Jean. And my sobriety date's April 1st, 1986. And it's only through God's grace and people like you that I'm sober and real grateful. Oh, God. I never knew somebody could love me as much as my mother. My mother, I didn't think that was possible. But anyway, I'm going to try to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today, and the best of my ability. I really thank you for allowing me to be here, to be a part of this seminar. I didn't know it was a seminar. I have never been to a woman's seminar or conference. I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I really am. I was a woman that didn't like women, of course, because I wanted to put on the facade that I was better than. I came from a little town of Houma, and if y'all don't know where that is, that's Houma, Louisiana, and we live on the bayou, and that's where I was raised. And I always start my talk off with the fact that I thought I was so unique when I got here, and I thought I was unique for a long time because I had two sets of parents. And, my friends didn't have two sets of parents. And and I didn't know that my aunt raised me since I was about 6 months old, so I called her mama. And when I went to visit my real mother and father, I called them mama and daddy. And it was a real confused life if I had to explain it to anyone. Because they said, well, you lost me, who's your mama and who's your brother and who's your sister? And anyway, my mother and father gave me up to her sister when I was 6 months because she had three other babies in diapers and she couldn't take care of me. And so she was supposed to have me just for a little while, and she was supposed to give me back. And when she tried to give me back to my parents, she said I got real sick and I'm feverish and I cried to come back. And ever since then, I lived with her. She's gone today, but that's a whole other story. I had started drinking at the age of 13. I was real. I drank and I did drugs and I did a lot of those things because I didn't feel good about me. I wanted to be a part of. I had two best friends. We did everything together, and we got in trouble a lot, and I did a lot of things. And after I was going to high school, and I always didn't fit in. I wasn't pretty enough, and I wasn't big enough, and I didn't have big enough boobs, and I didn't have what you had, and I was always in competition with women. And therefore, for me to be a part of, I would drink, and I would fight. I say that because that's what I did all my life. I drank, and I fought. And I didn't care. I got to a point where I didn't care. I went to high school and I graduated from high school. And I thought I was so proud of myself because I graduated from high school. Because nobody in my family ever graduated from high school. I have a big family and there were 10 of them. And nobody ever graduated. And I thought that was a big deal for me. So it made me feel better than, So I had something above what they didn't have. And that gave me this big ego that, I didn't even know the word ego when I got to AA. I didn't know about resentment when I got to AA. I didn't know the definitions of anything. Because when I went through school, I drank and I used drugs and I was out of it. I don't know how I graduated, really. And I used to say this a lot because I was very active in school and I played volleyball. And I loved volleyball because I was good at volleyball. It was probably the only thing I was good at other than drinking, And a lot of times I saw two balls on that court, And I never told anyone that I saw that because they would have just laughed me out, And it's so funny today. I guess I have to tell this story because it's staring me in the face. And I got to say, I had these two best friends and they were not alcoholic. They didn't drink like I did. And I always thought that they did. I always thought they drank like I did and they did what I did. But they didn't do that. And I've been in this program for 14 years and lo and behold, my best friend's in AA now. She's 3 weeks sober. Never known that. It's awesome. Of course, I didn't see her in 10 years. You see, when I left from high school, I didn't care. you know, and I didn't know what I was going to do or how I was going to be. I grew up in this home where my mother, my stepmother, was very much a perfectionist. Everything had to be her way. She was in control. And if I had one drop of water on a dish that I was driving, I'd get a slap in my face. I washed baseboards with toothbrushes. I kind of felt like Cinderella. You know, I didn't get to go to the ball, you know. My mother was really illiterate because she didn't know how to read and write, and so I went through school, and I didn't have much help. And, of course, I didn't really want to learn. I just was going out there to have fun. And that was my thing. When I drank and used drugs, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have fun. And I went through my life wanting to have fun, and that's all I thought it was. And it got to a point where I was getting raped, and I was getting beat, and I was doing these things, and found myself with people I didn't know, you know, waking up places I'd never been. And I used to drink and black out from get-go. I thought everybody drank and black out like me. I thought everybody drank like me. I never thought that for one second that they had a normal drinker. You know, I saw my dad and my mom a lot, and we'd go there every other weekend. And I knew exactly where I wanted to be. You know, I wasn't stupid. I drank, but I wasn't stupid. I wanted to be there with them because that's all they did was party. You know, my father was a shrimper, and he went out on the boats, and when he went out there for 30 days, he come back in, and he had a lot of money, and he played cards, and he drank, and he was the king. Do you understand? And I had to be the queen. I really did. And that's how I felt. I was, and I saw him one night, and I saw him beat my brother, and I said, I would never be like my father, never. My father drank from the time he was young, and he doesn't drink today, but he doesn't go to AA, and I said I would never be like him because he was so angry and so hateful, and he beat those kids, and I was so grateful that I wasn't in that home. You know, but I wanted to be there because I wanted to have fun like them. And so I left home, and I thought that I'd go live with my sister. And before then, I had ran away from home because my mother, she was just, I just couldn't take her anymore. You know, she didn't want to let me jump windows. She didn't want to let me go with the boys. And she was so prejudiced, and she had all this stuff, you know. And so I ran away from home one time, and, you know, they said I was growing weed behind a levee, and I said, no, we wasn't doing that, you know, and she turned me in. She turned me in, and I went in front of a judge, and I just say this to show you my attitude. It was that, you know, I went in front of this judge, and he said, you know, we can send you to LTI, and I said, oh, really, you know, and he said, you know, I wouldn't put my dog there. I said, well, why in the hell you want to put me there, you know? And that was my attitude. I didn't care. I didn't have no respect. I could tell you anything that was on the top of my mind, and I didn't care if it hurt you or not. It just didn't matter. And I was only about 17 then. You know, I went through my life, and I drank, and I blacked out, and I did all these things, and I left to go live with my sister, and I never forget, she introduced me to these black mollies, and if you don't know what they are, they're some amphetamines, and they allowed me to drink more. So, you know, I'd take a couple of black mollies, and I'd go, and I'd drink all night, you know, and I didn't have to, there was a requirement for taking them. She just wasn't giving them up just to give them up, you know. I knew she wasn't. I had to clean her house. Well, that was nothing coming from where I came from with my mama. You know, I clean her house, and then I could go out and drink all night, you know. And I did. I decided that I needed to go live with my real parents. And I went to live with my real parents, and they lived in this town called Abbeville, Louisiana. And I went over there, and I started drinking. And I set out a goal. I wanted to be just like my brothers. And I'm going to describe my brothers. My brothers wore Harley T-shirts, Harley hats, and they wore chains on their hips, and they were real cool. And I wanted to be just like them. And the only thing they didn't have was a Harley. I didn't understand that. I did not, you know, because when I drank and I hung around with the people that had Harleys, I rode the Harleys, you know. I always wanted a Harley. And so I hung around with a lot of biker people, and, you know, they kept me alive. They really did. They kept me alive. Because that's when I really started taking the other drugs and putting them in my veins and, you know, doing anything and everything to get me high, to not be what I thought I was. You see, because alcohol made me feel like you looked. It made me feel pretty. It made me feel tall because I'm short. It made me feel like I had big boobs. It made me feel all those things that I couldn't feel if I didn't have that stuff in my system. And I started, and so anyway, I went out there and I started hanging out with my brothers and I started running the bars, and we wiped out quite a few bars. I found out that with my, they were great enablers, because what they did for me was they allowed me to be queen. And when you allow a woman like me to be queen, it is very dangerous. And I went through my life for a lot of years being queen. I can go in the bar, and if I didn't like you, I can punch the hell out of you, and they would clean up the mess. You see, I never had to pay the consequences of my behavior. Never. They did it for me. You know, I was a spoil brat kid from get-go. I had gotten everything and anything I ever wanted in life, materialistically. And my mother, she gave me love, and I never saw it. I never saw it. I rejected it. She gave me the only thing she had. You know, it's not my mom and dad's fault that I'm an alcoholic. It's not my brother's fault that I'm an alcoholic. It's me. I'm the one that picked up that alcohol and put it in my system because it made me feel so much better. It made me feel a part of. It was the solution to my problem. You see, because I started thinking. I would always start thinking about, why did they give me away? Why couldn't I be with my mother and father? What was the problem with me? What was wrong with me? You know, and I never got those answers. You know, and I would start drinking. And then I would make you pay for that, you see. And the only emotion I ever knew was anger. And the only reaction I ever knew was to strike at you. And that's the way I lived my life for a very long time. I started with the men. I had this one person that I was totally obsessed with. I have no idea why. He was in and out of jail all the time. He did a lot of alcohol and drugs, and he always got caught. He'd beat old women up for their money, and he'd go to jail, and I was loving him. I just never understood that. And the only thing I could tell you was that that blonde hair and then blue eyes just knocked me to my knees. And that's what I would say, you know, and it didn't matter if I was married or I wasn't married. If that man would come out of jail, I was there. And if that's not sick, I don't know what is. But I tell you, I got married in 1979, and I got married to this guy because I was living with my real mom and dad, and they didn't want me running the streets with my brothers, and they tried to keep me, but they never could, you know. And so I decided I'm going to get married. This guy paid attention to me, and we got married, and he was a loner, and I thought I could help him, really. That's why I really married him. I didn't know it at the time. I really didn't. Because he was a loner, and he was always, you know, by himself, and he was always there, and he just seemed like a good guy, so I figured I'm going to get married. You know, the guy got out of jail, you know, the other guy, got out of jail, came to my wedding. You know, it was there. You know, the first weddings, on the wedding song, what was the wedding song? Cocaine. That was the wedding song, you know, and I mean, and my mom and dad didn't think nothing of it. They gave me this elaborate wedding, you know. I mean, I had everything. I didn't even remember the wedding, you know. I went down the aisle. I was so loaded. I didn't even remember the wedding, you know. I was married to him for 4 years, and he had a perfect job for me, for a woman alcoholic like me, because you see, I love the bars. You couldn't keep me out the bars. I love this. I love the music. I love the pool. I love the men. I love everything about bars. And I always drank in them. And when he went offshore for 7 days, I drank for 7 days. And I paid the whole bar with his money. You know, That boyfriend of mine didn't have a Harley, so I figured I'd buy one for him. When my husband was offshore, he bought himself a Harley, and I let the boyfriend drive it. That was really sick of me. I didn't know that I wasn't doing anything. I didn't know that was wrong. I guess I did, but I stayed so drunk that it didn't matter to me if it was wrong or right. The only thing good that came out of that marriage was my two girls. And I have two children, and God, I put them girls through hell. Because, you see, I drank, and our marriage ended when he came back from offshore and caught me in the bar with another man. That's how it ended. And I was so spoiled and so self-centered and selfish, I didn't realize it. And, you know, that night when he started to beat me up, and he really beat me up. He put bruises on me. It was one of the first times he ever hit me. And I thought I deserved it because, right, I got caught with another man. And so I figured I'm going to go tell my daddy. And my daddy's going to take care of him. Well, I went to wake up my daddy, and he didn't get up. And he said it was too bad, you know. And my alcoholism really progressed then. Because, you see, the judge took away my kids because I was an unfit mother due to alcoholism and drug addiction. And I couldn't see my kids anymore. And the pain of that was so great. I went to my daughter, my second daughter's birthday, and she was 1 year old, and I couldn't take her out the yard. And that killed me, you see. And so what I did was I left for 3 days and got drunk. That's what I did with those feelings. I never felt anything. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very numb. I was numb for a lot of years. When I was drinking with my brothers and stuff, I had a situation that this is where alcoholism took me, and I'm really not proud of that. And it's part of my attitude and behavior that I seen this after I got sober. And one of the things was that they had me fight with a man, and in the street, and they wanted me to spar with this guy, and we did. And I got out in the street and I started fighting with the guy, and the guy started really punching me in the face. And you know, my brothers carried these chains, so I had to carry a chain, and I had the chain in my pocket, and the handle was about this long, and we called it Old Blue, and I had it in my pocket, and he was punching me real hard, and I took a couple of Valiums, and I was drinking that White Russian, and you know, I wasn't feeling much of anything, but one thing that he was beating me up, and what they did was they hollered at me and said, "What you going to do with that chain in your pocket? You going to keep it there?" And I took the chain out, and I beat the hell out of the guy. And I started running after the guy about a block away, and I beat the hell out of him, and I didn't even remember it. I had no clue that I had done this. The next morning, we went back to that same apartment complex where we were doing these drinking and doing these drugs, and I asked where so-and-so was, and they said, "Oh, you don't remember?" I said, "No. What happened?" I remember fighting in the street, but I didn't remember everything. And I had gotten in a rage, is what had happened. And, you know, when I get in a rage, I can't stop me. I couldn't. It controlled my entire body. And the guy came down and he pulled up his shirt and he had big old welts on his back all over. And he said, "This is what you did to me." And I felt like an animal. You know, I felt like, God, you have no decency, one piece of decency left in you. And you know what I did with that? I picked up another drink. Because I couldn't face the fact that alcohol had took me that far. That I couldn't control it. You see, I didn't know that, I thought alcoholism was someone out in New Orleans on Royal and Bourbon Street, homeless with a paper bag wrapped around a bottle, and they would drink it. And I thought that was alcoholism. I never knew that alcoholism consisted more of just drinking. It consisted of the behavior and the attitude and all this stuff, all this, hatefulness and things that I had in me that I never knew I had. You see, I was living in a facade and I never even knew it. And some people actually say, "Oh, you knew you was doing it." I said, "No, I didn't know. Because I didn't want to know." You know, we have selective hearing, and we have selective, you know, we see what we want to see, really. I didn't know that. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I left this guy, and I met another man, and he had the drug I wanted, so I went with him. And this was the man that was going to bring me to Alcoholics Anonymous. The only reason I went with him was because he had the drug I wanted. And I met his parents, and those parents were good to my children. I got my kids back during that time because, you know, my ex-husband came and he dropped the kids off on the doorstep and said he couldn't take care of them anymore. You know, I didn't know how to be a mother, and I still don't know how to be a mother. It is very hard for me as an alcoholic to be a mother. I didn't know how to give love. I didn't know how to share love. I had no idea. You know, I thought sex was love. You know, and I used it. I failed to say, you know, I was a very abused person. I was sexually abused, mentally abused, physically abused most of my life. And I had it done by members of my family. And it was a dirty secret. And I did not, I was never a victim, I want to tell you. I was never a victim because I always took care of myself. I did not ever, ever tell anyone about that. You see, because that was for too shameful. And it wasn't till I was 5 years sober that I even got into that, you know. I stayed with this guy for about 4 years. Every man I've been with, I never passed 4 years. I don't know what was the problem. I always pushed him away. I always, you know, it was like, you know, my life was, I used you, I abused you, and I threw you away. And I didn't care what you were, who you were, it didn't matter to me. I was never scared of you. It didn't matter where you came from. I was going to get what I wanted anytime I wanted it. And I got it most of the time. I manipulated. You see, having two sets of parents was the ideal thing for me. I manipulated one set to get what I wanted, and if they didn't get it to me, I'd go to the other set. So I learned how to manipulate at a very young age. I knew how to play the game, and I played the game over and over and over again. You know, I did expect different results, and I never got it. And I think they call that insanity. You know, and I did some insane crap, okay? And I stayed with this guy, and all of a sudden about... I have an incident that I like to share is because this was, I was never grateful for anything, okay? I took advantage of everything I had, everything my parents gave me. They gave me everything I ever wanted in life. I had everything. My friends had everything they wanted. It wasn't like I was a deprived child. I was not a deprived child, you know, but I made myself to be a deprived child. You know, my brothers hated me, and I didn't know that. They hated me because they were over there with my mom and dad, my dad beating the hell out of them, and I was over here with their aunt, and I was getting everything I wanted. They were so jealous of me. They hated me. I can remember when my mother, my stepmother, would not let me play with my brothers because she said they were too bad. I can never forget that. I said, my God, she doesn't even know, have a clue what I've done, you know. And I jumped a lot of windows, and I did what I wanted to do. And that day that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was because that 30 days prior, this guy's mother and father put him in a treatment center for alcoholism. Now, I didn't think this guy was an alcoholic, because let me tell you this. For 4 years I lived with him, 4 years we drank, and 4 years we fought. And we'd go out together at a bar. He would look at another woman, and I'd punch him in the face. That was the way we lived for 4 years. So it wasn't like he was an alcoholic, and he always wanted to go home. I never wanted to go home. I told people, I said, I'd get in the truck with this guy, and we'd go on down this lonely road, and he said he wanted to go home, and he'd punch the dashboard, and that was the end of him, because I'd jump out the truck and say, I'm going back to the bar, and I did it all the time. I jumped out the moving vehicle, okay, and I'd walk back to the main highway, And I'd have bruises all over me, and an old man would pick me up, and I'd say, why the hell you didn't pick me up way back there, because I had to walk so damn far. You know? That's how grateful I was. I was never grateful. And I wouldn't even know the old man if I'd see him today. You know, and I thought, that man probably thought I was really crazy. You know, and I'd go back to the bar and I'd drink. And that's how I led my life. And when he went into treatment, you know, I was, I left my kids in diapers for days. You know, I never told anybody that. When I came to AA, I came to AA and, I was about 2 months sober, and we were talking about something about mothers, and I had to admit that day that I'd left my kids with diapers that were 2 and 3 days old, and they were with lice in their hair. And you see, nothing came before my drinking, and that was the point. I didn't know that nothing came before my drinking, because I would always have to drink to make me feel better, to make me feel whole. You know, I didn't know that I had a hole in me so big. I didn't know that. I didn't know that I was filled with fear because I was so angry all the time. I didn't know that because I never, you know, you don't go out on the street and you say, oh, I'm really scared. You know, you don't do that, you know. They'll punch you in the face, you know, take your drugs, you know. And it's like, don't take them. But, you know, that's the way I was, and that's what happened to me. And, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous when he got out of that treatment center, and he said, look, I bought the book. You need to read it. And I thought, really? I need to read it? Okay, I'll read it. So I opened the book, and they have a part in the book that says, we don't like to pronounce any individual alcoholic. Go out to the nearest barroom and try some controlled drinking. Perfect line for me. I'm going to go out and try some controlled drinking because, you see, I am not convinced I'm an alcoholic. Now, this guy was sent to the treatment center because he was an alcoholic, they said. Well, I didn't drink like him. I always want to go back to the bar. He always passed out. So I thought if he's an alcoholic, I'm far from an alcoholic. You know, and so anyway, I read the book, and I went to meetings with him, and the only reason I went to meetings with him was because I wanted him to prove that he was the problem. You see, I didn't have a problem. He was the problem, and if he would get straight, my life would be fine. That was the deal. You know, you get straight, and everything's going to be all right. That was my thing. It was always going to be all right if it was something else, you know. And I never forget, you know, he came in there, and I went to meetings, and I heard what you said, and when I read that, I had to go back out and try some controlled drinking. I definitely had to do that. And I set out to do that one night. And by that time, my real parents had moved to Texas. And if anybody lived in Texas, you know how they are. You know, you don't buy drinks in a bar over there. You buy setups. And it's just the ice in the cup. So you have to go to any length to drink in Texas. I truly believe that. Because I had to go to the store and buy some milk. I had to go to the store, to the liquor store, and buy the Kahlua and the vodka. And then I had to go to the bar and try this controlled drinking. I consciously did this. And so then I thought, well, I need to take a couple of Valiums to relax me. And then I could drink just maybe a couple drinks, and I'm going to be fine. Well, it didn't happen that way. I wind up in this bar. And I was drinking with my brothers and my father, and I was going to control my drinking. In fact, I believe I told them I was going to control my drinking. Well, of course, they didn't want to hear nothing about quitting drinking, because they were drinking, you know. So I went into this bar, and I remember starting to drink. The next thing I remember is I'm on the stage with no clothes, dancing. You know, some people do that as an art. That's fine. You know, their body is an art, and they do it, and that's fine. And they make a lot of money. That's cool with me. I had never done it. And the disgusting part of that was that my father was sitting there watching me. How low can you get? And I didn't want that to happen. I never intended for that to happen. And so I remember those faces in AA. I was dancing on that stage, and I remember those faces. And I remember them saying something about being self-centered. And I thought, I love this self-centered stuff. I love it, because these men were throwing me money. I said, if I should have did this all alone, you know. And I didn't know it was going to be my last drunk, you know. God darn, you know. I really didn't. If I would have known, you know, I don't know what I'd have done that night if I'd have known it was going to be my last drunk. But anyway, I love the center of attention. I you know, when I came to this program, and if you'd have called me a prostitute, I'd have told you I was not. And damn it, I always got what I wanted when I wanted it. And how the hell you think I got it? I was, you know. And I never put down anybody from what they did before, ever since I discovered that about me, you know. And I had did some disgusting things that I was never proud of. And that's why I took another drink, because I didn't want to feel anything. I didn't want to feel the shame and the remorse and the guilt and all that crap that went with alcoholism, you see. All the things I had done and that people told me that I did the day after. You know, I mean, I would lay there and I would just think, no, that wasn't me. That was somebody else, you know. And it never happened. It was always me. I always had to get what I wanted, and I paid at any price. I got what I wanted. I got into that meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came back to AA, and I got picked up the chip, and I stayed sober. And I didn't know how to stay sober, and they told me to get a sponsor, and I did. You know, I didn't like women, and I got to say this. I'm at a woman's conference, and it's kind of, maybe my story's a little different talking to a bunch of women. I don't know. But I didn't like women because I was always in competition with women, and I hated you. I didn't want you by me, you know, because you dressed better than me. You acted better than me. And in my eyes, I can see that you were better than me, and I never wanted to see that. You know, alcoholism took away my dignity, my pride. They took away everything. Took away my self-respect. I had no self-respect when I came to this program. I had no self-esteem. You know, and yet, you know, if I was in a gutter, laying in the ditch, and you would have come to help me, I would have told you, get the hell away from me. I don't need your help. That was my attitude. And when I came to AA, they told me that I needed to ask for help. And I remember this woman, her name is Sally, and she comes from Abbeville, and she was my first sponsor. And she told me that. She said, Norma Jean, if you don't ask for help, you're going to die. She said, you know, and if you don't get in this book and you don't work these steps, you're going to die. And I didn't want to die. You know, I was crazy, but I didn't want to die. You know, I didn't like pain either. So I got her for a sponsor, and I went to a lot of meetings. And at about three months sober, I caught the guy that I live with another woman. We call that 13-stepping, don't we? I found her at her house, and I wanted to beat the hell out of her. And I got to him first, and I started beating him. And, you know, I got my kids back at that time. And that was only through God's grace that my kids came back to me. And they were 2 and 3 years old at the time, or 3 and 4 years old, I'm sorry. And they were in the truck with me that night. And I lived in this place called Esther. That's all they had was rice and cornfield and I don't know what else they had. They had animals, because I remember riding the horse, and I fell off. I was drunk. And, you know, and the horse fell on me, and I had a fractured hip, you know. And I knew how far it was to town. And that night, I was looking for him, and when I found him at that woman's house, I was devastated. You see, I was 2 months sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never had anything into my system, and when I saw him at another woman's house at 3 a.m, I went into a rage. I actually seen me for who I really was that night, because I went there, and I was beating him to get to her at her own house. And I thought, this is crazy. And when I stopped beating him was because my kids came out of the truck and they said, Mama, please don't kill him. And I stopped what I was doing. And I went to the truck, and it was the only place I had to go was that trailer that I lived in. I had no money in my pocket. I had no booze. I had nothing. And I can remember them saying in the meeting something about praying. I had never prayed since I was a little child. And I went and I got on my knees and I said, whoever, whatever's out there, please help me, because I'm going to go crazy. You see, I couldn't stop the madness inside of me anymore. And I had to have that power greater than me. And I didn't know that I was asking for help. I didn't know that I was begging for help. And I was. Because I didn't want to drink anymore. The next morning, I called the sponsor that you told me to get. And she came over there, and she had a list of 10 things for me to do. And she said, and the first thing on the list was that, she said, honey, is there anywhere that you can go? And I said, not really. Maybe my stepmother and father will take me back. Because, you see, about 2 years prior to that, I was really, really drunk one night. And I called my stepfather up, and he was a businessman, see, and he was never there. And he always talked to me, and he was one of the men in my life that I respected. I never listened to him, but I respected him, you know. And he told me something that day. I was drunk, and he said, you know, don't call me anymore. Don't bother me and your mother anymore. You're disgusting. The only way you're going to go is down from here. And I never called him back because I disgusted him. And I had pushed him away. And he only tried to help me, you know. And I called him that day. And I told him that I didn't have a place to go. And I told him that I was in AA. And I told him that I needed help. And I wanted to be sober. And he told me something that was very, very useful in my life, and something that, you know, something happens to us when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous and we don't see it, but other people see it. Other people see it in us and hear it in us. And I didn't know that. And he said, I heard it in your voice. Something was different this time. Because, you see, I'd always called him to get me out of jams. My mother always got me out of jams. She always paid my bills to get me when I was married to my first husband, you know. She always paid my bills after I had go spent all the money, you know, and went to bars. So she enabled me also. And they told me not to call back, so I didn't call back. And my friends, my best friends, you know, my one friend that's here tonight, she never turned her back on me, ever. But I was so ashamed that I never went back there to tell her, because I felt so full of shame that I didn't want her to know all the things that I had been through. I didn't want her to see me as that. You know, my mother always used to tell me that I wasn't going to amount to anything. She said I was nothing. And I believed her. I believed I was nothing. And, you know, I had to, when I was drinking, I had to tell this episode and go on because I think it's so funny. I never had a job. I thought it was men's job to take care of me. You see, a man had to take care of me every which way, emotionally, spiritually, physically, financially, every which way. And if you didn't meet that criteria, you were gone, you know. And the thing about it was, I had a job one day. And I had a job at a bakery. In a national. And I was so proud of myself, and because I never wanted to work, didn't intend to work, you know, they was going to take care of me. And so I went hungover at this job. I was real proud of myself in a bakery. And this lady came in, and she wanted this cake, and it was in the glass. And I said, oh, you want that cake? You can have that cake. And so she said, okay. I said, $16.95. I don't remember how much the cake was, something in the 16 range. And fine, so I boxed the cake up, and thank God I didn't have to write the name, you know, on the cake. She didn't want no name written on the cake, so I gave her the cake, and about an hour later, we get a phone call. You know, my manager comes up to me, and he says, you sold a lady a cake earlier. I don't actually remember exactly what he said. He said it was a styrofoam cake. And he said I was fired. That was the end of my career, you know. Go back to letting men take care of me. But anyway, I thought that was real funny. And so I was in AA, and I went back to Houma, Louisiana, where I was from. And I went to the meeting, and I asked for help, you know. And I stayed in Houma for a while, and I had to take these geographicals. I always was moving. You know, and I can remember, you know, my mama saying something like, you always from pillow to post, all the time. And that's what I did. And I did it in sobriety. You know, I had this big exterior thing built around me that I would never let you in at any cost. And I did that in sobriety. And I moved to Houma, and then I, of course, I met a man at a convention. I was about 4 months sober, and I met another man. And this was, oh, he was just good looking, and he was, and he followed me to Texas after I moved to Texas. I always get this wild hair up my butt or something that I'm going to go somewhere else, and it's going to be better there. And I'm sober, and I'm in AA, and I'm trying to do the right thing. And I didn't know anything. I was bouncing off the walls. I didn't know about this book or the steps or nothing. I did them. I really did. I got a sponsor, and I did them. But you see, I wouldn't let them women in. I wouldn't let that sponsor in much. But I would go through the motion. And what I did was I faked it till I made it, is what I did. I didn't realize that's what I was doing in the beginning, but that's what I did. And, you know, they told me to go to meetings. They got me involved in service at get-go. You know, I was 6 months sober, and I was in service. You know, I didn't know how to do it. They said, you don't have to worry about how to do it. Once you know how to do it, they're just going to rotate you out, you know, so just don't worry about it if you know how to do it. And, you know, that's true. That's what we do here. You know, we learn a certain position, and then we get rotated out. So, I got involved, and I went to a lot of meetings, and I shared a lot. I chaired a lot of meetings, and they let me chair. But you see, when I moved to Texas, these people in Texas are really rough. Not just about drinking, but what the sober people in AA, they rough. They don't want to hear about your drugs. They don't want to hear about nothing. And they told me so in the meeting. They said, look, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. You got a problem with drugs? They got another program for you. In the middle of the meeting, I said, how humiliating. How could I get humble? You know, and so anyway, these old men, they take me by the hand and they say, "Oh, come over here, honey. We're gonna tell you about it." And they would, and you know, I thank those older people in Alcoholics Anonymous, the ones that have years of sobriety. They gave me what they had. They gave it to me. They showed me how to do it. They took me by the hand. They watched my children. I want to say this: Alcoholics Anonymous raised my children, and thank God, thank God. They took them out of meetings, and they read to them. They took them out of meetings, and they played with them, and they gave them ice cream. They did them those things for my children that I could never do for them, ever. And I wanted to do it with all my soul. I wanted to do it, and I couldn't. I couldn't. And I thank God and AA for that. I lived in Texas for a little while, and I lived with this man, and he was living in my house, and he didn't have a job. He didn't have a driver's license, and he was real spiritual. You know, he tried to put me through a window, and I called the police. At least I didn't have to punch him in the mouth. And I thought, that is progress. But let me tell you, after I said that, we went to that club that day, I punched him in the mouth. And I felt so bad. I thought, you know, because I didn't have a drink to cover it up anymore. And I was having all this anger. And, you know, one of the sponsors told me that it was a lot of fear. And I didn't want to look at that because, you see, I was never scared of nothing. Nothing. And, I want to say this. I got in a lot of fights when I was drinking, and I lost a lot of fights because I don't want you to sit here and think that I won. I was this little bitty thing, and I lost a lot, but I was never scared of nothing. And the thing about it was I went over there and when I punched that guy in the mouth, you see, because at a year sober, we think we're well. I can't believe that I did that to him, you know? And so he was out of my life real quick. But then I met another man. See, I thought that I had to have men in my life to make me whole. I thought that if I had a man, it would make me happy and whole. And it never happened. Never happened. I got with this man, and I lived with him 4 years, and we moved back to Houma, and then I moved to New Orleans. And New Orleans, and this is all in sobriety. And so I'm telling you, you can be crazy in sobriety. And I sponsored women at that time, and if you didn't do what I told you to do, you were gone. You're fired. Go find somebody else. Waste their time. Don't waste mine. And I was crazy. And I thought I was controlling everything. You see, in sobriety, walking around AA, angry, and I didn't even know it again. I have this one guy, this man that was in my life, and I respect him, and he was from the West Bank of New Orleans, and I asked him one day, I said, what is wrong with me?
I asked him, I said, what is really wrong with me? Be honest. Why people don't like me? Why don't I have any friends? He said, if I was an arrogant bee like you, I wouldn't have any friends either. And you see, it seems to me that when I am ready to have the message received, it is there. Beyond my control, but beyond my thoughts, that it is there. Because I was willing to hear this man that day. It was the day that I cried in an AA meeting. I had never cried in an AA meeting. I was 5 years sober before I cried. You see, because I never wanted to let the walls down. You were not going to see me for what I really was. I was scared for you to see me, but yet you didn't like me anyway. So why didn't I let you see me? I kept you out here because I didn't want you too close, because you was going to hurt me, because that's how I lived. And that day, the walls just came down. And I was so grateful. Everybody in the meetings were laughing, and they were clapping, and I was crying. I couldn't believe it. I said, why are they doing this? Why are they laughing? I'm crying here. This is an emotional thing. They said, because you're crying. It's a wonderful thing. You know, and, you know, I'm not that person today that I used to be. I can't even picture myself being that way. You know, that's what this program does for me. You know, beyond my fondest dreams, I would have shortchanged myself if I would have asked for God for something. You know, I came in this program, I was agnostic. I didn't believe that God would do anything for me. I believe he could do it for you, but he wasn't going to do it for me. You know, they told me to say thank you. I mean, they told me, ask God to keep you sober in the morning and thank him at night. And I did that. And that was simple. And I kept doing it, even though I didn't believe it. I do a lot of things today, because even when I don't believe it's going to work. I picked up a lot of ashtrays and I mopped a lot of floors. And for this egomaniac, it was horrible for me to do that. You know, I was a small, bright kid and got everything I wanted. And here I am mopping a floor for me to stay sober. You know, and guess what? I still mop floors. I still pick up ashtrays. And I'm not better than not to do it. You know, I am just like you, and it's okay. It's okay. You know, I never thought it was going to be okay. You know, I either had to be underneath you or I had to be above you. I never could be just like you. Today, I'm just like you. You know, I used to, you know, I hear June G in my mind when I came into the program, because, you see, she said something to the effect that she never liked what she wore and she never liked what she looked like. And at a point in my life, I liked what I wore and I liked what I looked like and I liked what I am. And I never thought that I would get to that point. And that is such a great point. It's such a freedom for me to be just like I am. And, you know, it's okay if you don't like me. I don't care if you like me. You know, it's how I feel about you that is the difference. It's what comes from inside of me that's the difference. It's not what's on the outside. It's immaterial what's on the outside. It's what's on the inside, and it took me so long to find that out. It really did. I love my life today. I got in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just took it like a fish took to water, and I love it. I don't have to lie anymore. I don't have to have that big monkey on my back anymore. It's okay. I could turn around and it's okay. I'm not scared of that anymore. You know, and I always had to find out, you know, when I was out there, I always had to lie and lie to cover up another lie and lie again and lie again. And I never was me. I don't have to lie today, you know. And in fact, you see straight through me anyway. So it doesn't matter, you know. When I reached that point that I knew that women could see straight through me, that's why I didn't like them. Because they knew what I was about, you know. So, you know, at 2 years sober, I did start a woman's meeting out on the West Bank. And I did that because my sponsor told me to. She said, you know, you need to stop talking to the men and talk to the women. And I did. You know, and I was this sponsor that... You know, I sponsored you, and if you went towards a man, oh, they were going to hear it. I humiliated them in meetings, you know. And I said, you know, these men, these women don't come here for you. They come here to get sober. You know, and I believe that somebody told me that when I came in. And I guess that's why I do it, you know. And it's something in me that I find that some days I'm not so selfish, and some days I'm not so self-centered, and some days I'm not so dishonest, and some days I'm just not so depressed, you know. And I'm just me, and it's okay. And if you don't like it, too bad, you know. And when I got able to say that, I have experienced the freedom and the peace. You know, I met this man that I lived with that we moved to New Orleans. I found him. He hung himself, and I found him. And he was 4 years sober, and I was 5 years sober. And I thought that I was going to go crazy that day. The same man that told me that I was arrogant B, he was there. He brought me to his home, and he put me in his house, and I stared at the Serenity Prayer for days. I didn't want to drink. But, you know, my sponsor came over, and you know what she said? She said, "Norma Jean, you're not powerful to kill nobody, so don't think about it. Don't think that you killed this man, you know. Because let me tell you, I would have had the power, you know. I would have thought I had the power anyway. And I didn't. And, you know, there was a lot of people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that pointed fingers at me, that had the gall to point fingers at me and resented me and told me that I had killed this man, you know. And this Al-Anon woman came up and she said, "Honey, don't worry about them. They don't have a clue." And she picked me up and they took care of me. Her husband and her. They took care of me for 4 days. I went to Texas and we buried this man. Alcoholics Anonymous buried this man. You know, I always want to say that Alcoholics Anonymous takes care of their own, because they buried him. And I'm so grateful for that. I had a spiritual experience at his funeral, and I can't stand here and describe the spiritual experience because there's no way of describing it, other than the fact that it could have been an outer body experience. But I looked around. I was at the coffin, and I looked around, and there was no one there. God took me out of there for the time being, and it was such a wonderful freedom. You see, because I didn't realize that as sick as we get, this man could have took my life and my children's life. You know, I always had put things between me and my children, and he could have took us. Because the moment of insanity that he had, that he hung himself with, he hung himself cold sober. And I knew that could happen to me. I knew it. And I got into this program more than so fiercely. I just kept coming, and I got into service, and I sponsored people, and I got into this book, and I did 12-step studies, and I went on 12-step calls, and I do that a lot today. I still do a lot of that today. I believe that is the solution for me. To think more about you than to think about me is the solution. You know, my God is always there. He has a sense of humor. You know, when I'm ready to surrender and give up the fact that maybe I'm not supposed to be with a man. You know, they always seem to go away, so maybe I don't need a man. Here's one coming. You know, when I come to that part in the road that says, you know, Norma Jean, you really don't need a man. You're going to be okay. You don't need them for their money. You don't need them for their love. You don't need them for anything. But if you want to be with them, then maybe that's okay. You see, when I was okay with me is when I could be okay with them. And I didn't know that. You know, I went to school, back to school. After 12 years, I was out of school. And I went to the business school, and I'm a secretary. I had been a secretary now for about over 10 years. And, you know, I'm grateful because I wasn't going to be anything. I was nothing, you know. And I didn't finish that business school, but I needed the money to support my kids. You know, I'm not too proud to say that I was on welfare. You know, because I needed to take care of my kids, and I didn't know how. I didn't have a career. I didn't have a goal. I didn't know anything. I went to school when I was 2 years sober, and I didn't get a degree, but I'm a secretary today. Because one of you people owned a business and said, "Why don't you come work for me? I'm going to give you that chance." And that's what he did for me. And I'm a secretary ever since. I love AA, and I love the people in AA. I love the women in AA. I never thought that I would ever be able to say that. Because, you see, I got so close to women after I had that woman's meeting that I'd go to the older women because I knew they had lived a lot longer than me. And they were wise. And they had been in AA a lot longer. And so I'd go to them and I'd ask them. And they'd tell me the truth. So that's why my sponsees, they hear the truth, whether they like it or not. You know, and if you don't want to hear the truth, then go out and drink some more. Because, you know, that's what it's going to take. It takes, you know, I love what Johnny Harris says. You know, just don't come to AA because you puke a little. Go out and drink, okay? Drink till you can't drink no more. I believe that, you know, and I believe in something else he says. What he says is there's a point in my sobriety in this program that we stop being takers and be givers. And I believe that because there was a point in my sobriety that I had to stop being the taker. I had taken everything from everybody and threw them away. I had to start being a giver or I was going to die. It's not a point of the fact of taking. It's the point that I was so damn selfish that everything was for me. Me, 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 I. That syndrome that's going to kill me. You know? And I had to let go. And I did. And God gave me that. You know, I believe that all this stuff is a process. You know, acceptance is a process for me. I don't let go until I'm absolutely beat up with it. I don't. I go to hell and back with it before I give it up, before I surrender. You know, and a God of my understanding has given me so much in this program. It's given me my self-respect back. It's given me my dignity back. It's given me that pride. And it's given me something that I never thought I would have, that I am just like you. I got married again, and I met this guy. The same guy that told me I was an arrogant bee introduced me to his pigeon and said, you know, Norma Jean, he really needs to socialize. Why don't you take him and socialize? Teach him how to socialize. I know you're going to those parents without pardon his dances. Why don't you take him? He never got there. He never got there. And we got married, and, you know, I did something different with him, and I share that because, you see, my mom had taught me a lot about morals, and she taught me some principles, and I never listened. But one of the things that she taught me that, she taught it to me, but yet she was just living with someone, so I thought it was okay. But in deep down, I mean, and that's okay for some people that wants to live with men and not marry them. It's okay. You know, because it was okay for me for a long time. And what happened was, I met this guy, and, you know, my children were growing up, and they were girls. You know? And I said, you know, I'm not going to shortchange myself anymore. I'm really not. You know, I had to tell this guy something, and I did. And I said, you know, if you plan on moving in this apartment, you best plan on marrying me. You see, I'm better than just to live with, okay? And I didn't know that I could take that risk. You see, God gave me that strength and that courage to do that day because I was okay with me. I could have never done it a year prior than I did it, maybe even a day before. But I did it that day, and he said, oh, you gave me an ultimatum. I said, no. You can walk away from this if you want, but I'm not going to do this again. I had done this over and over and over, even in sobriety, and I had enough. And, you know, this man came into my life, and don't get me wrong, men, they got their defects of character, too. But he told me he was going to buy me a house, and he bought me a house. He told me a lot of things, and he did those things he told me to do, that he was going to do. I didn't believe him, but he was in AA. They said I 13-stepped him. I probably did. I mean, I was about 6 years sober. He was about 11 months sober. I take that on. But the thing about it was that I was okay with me, and I told him that. I said, look, I don't need you for nothing. I really don't. And I didn't need him to meet my finances. I didn't need him to make me whole. I didn't need him to fill my self-esteem up. I had it. And so, you know, he asked me to marry him, and we went out for 8 months, and we got engaged for a year, and we got married. And, you know, that was a change. Because, you see, I used to just take men in, and then we'd just live together. We take hostages. That's what we do. And, you see, I had taught... That person that committed suicide taught me something. You see, I was using this man for my own selfish needs. You see, he came from a lower place than I did. When he was 5 years old, you know, he got in a lot of trouble. He didn't have a mother, and he came from a lower place, and I thought that if I was with him, I could help him. I thought, I used him for my own ego. How sick is that? In Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't tell you I wasn't working the steps. I was. I had a sponsor. I went to a lot of meetings, and I used this man, and that is sick. And I learned something from that relationship. Whether I wanted to go through it or not, I did. And I wasn't going to do this with him, and I didn't. And I still don't do it. And he trusts me today, you know. And for Sandy to stand up here and say that she trusts me with her fifth step, it's a big deal. Because nobody to trust me to do anything, you know. I didn't think anybody loved me that much. I was unlovable, I thought. And Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to love. They taught me how to love unconditionally. I don't want anything from you. And I tell that to all the people I sponsor. You're going to get in the book, and you're going to do the steps. And if you don't want to do that, then go back out and drink. Because I believe that this program doesn't work until we surrender all our old ideas. You see, my old ideas don't work today. They didn't work then, and they don't work now. My old ideas never did work, but I thought they did. It kept me alive long enough to find this program. Alcohol and drugs kept me alive long enough to be here with you, for you to show me love and for me to give it. And I never knew that I can give it. You know, and my husband is, my mother died. And I went into a treatment center and into depression. And I thought I was going to die because I wanted to die. And I went to that treatment center, and I was talking to Marcia earlier, and I was telling her about it. And I said, you know, I never thought that I was ever a depressed person. I really didn't. And I had gotten so depressed that I went into work and couldn't move, couldn't turn my computer on. And I was crying and uncontrollably, and I had to do something. And I had never been in a treatment center. I guess I had to find out. So I went to a treatment center. I didn't drink. I didn't use. I went to a treatment center. And, you know, I only had to be in a secure environment for me to practice the fourth step. You know, it's funny how we don't know what we need until it's there. And I felt secure enough to write to my mother. You know, that mail is still out there somewhere. Because I wrote it to Heaven's address, Heaven's Road, Heaven's whatever, USA. And I mailed it. Because, you see, I had made amends to my mother. And I hated my mother. And, you know, at 5 years, I loved my mother. Because, you see, she had cancer 5 years before she died. And I believe that God gave us those 5 years. I don't know if that's true or not, but I believe that because I got to know her, and she was okay just the way she was. It didn't matter if she was a control freak. It didn't matter that she wanted her way. It didn't matter. I could accept her for just the way she was, and I loved her, and I was able to sit there and be with her. My real mother and father, I didn't have a relationship with them until recently after my stepmother passed away, and I went over there, and, you know, my father, he drank a lot, and I was able to be there for my mother, you know. He had did those things to me, and I couldn't do that. God healed me. I had to be angry about all that stuff, and I had to grieve all that stuff before I could be able to be of service to anybody. I was there to be there for my mother and father, whether I wanted to or not. This program worked whether I wanted to or not, because, you see, I didn't know it was working. I go through the motions, and I do the steps, and I do what my sponsor tells me to do, and I don't know it's working. But one day, you look, and it's working, and it's right there in front of you. My sponsor had to tell me that maybe, just maybe, you know, this man that I lived with, that I married, that's my husband today, he gave me something so beautiful. I was working, and he went, and it was my birthday, and I was working. He had a key to my apartment, and he went in there, and he filled the apartment up with balloons. And he had a cake on the table, and he had 12 red roses. And I walked into the apartment at 5:30 in the evening after I got off of work, and I walked in there and I started crying because it was tears of joy. No one had ever done that for me before, ever. And I didn't know how to react, and I cried. And I thought, how wonderful is that? And I told my sponsor, I said, why is that? Why am I crying about this? And she said, you know, Norma Jean, you might have stopped treating people like crap. Maybe you're treating people the way they want to be treated, and therefore you're going to get it back. And he's treating you out of kindness and love, and you don't know how to see that. And I had not known that I was starting to treat people the way I wanted to be treated. You know, I stopped abusing you and using you and throwing you away. I started being a member of society and doing what God wants me to do rather than what I want to do. And you know, I love AA, and my husband got diagnosed with a disease, and once again I wanted to get into that depression and to get into that mode that, you know, why does this have to happen to me? You know, why me? And you know what my sponsor told me? Why not you? You know, why not? I truly believe that what goes around comes around. And let me tell you, I put out a lot of negativity when I was out there. You know, and it came back to me in this program. And one good thing is that I learned from that. You see, that's the difference today. I can take an experience and I can learn from it. It's not a bad experience. It's always what I look at it, how I look at it, what I do with it. I don't have to punch anybody in the face anymore today. You know, I can get a little angry and I can tell you how I feel and what I do. You know, that was another thing. I want to just say this and I'm going to shut up because I'm probably running out of tape. And James is going to say, you talk too long. But anyway, I lost my train of thought. Maybe I wasn't supposed to tell you. But one of the things is that I am real grateful that, I'm real grateful that I don't have to do that anymore. And I lost the train of thought. I hate when that happens. But anyway, I still go to AA, and I live in New Orleans, and my husband built me a house. And he was diagnosed with that disease. And my sponsor told me, why not me? And I tell you, I live with this every day, and I think, you know, if this would have been 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have left him. I wouldn't be there for him. I wouldn't take care of him. I would be so selfish that I would say, where's mine? But you know, I was telling somebody today, I said, I have everything I want and everything I need. When I came into this program, that sponsor told me, she said, God will provide you with everything you need. If you have shelter, you have food, and you have clothes, you have everything you need and your health. And I believe that. And ever since this program, I had everything I need and more. I have what I want. And I'm so grateful. You know, I'm so grateful for AA and for people like you that come into my life. You know, I believe that I was asked to come to this woman's conference because I probably have an issue with women still. Maybe I do. I believe that. It's always a lesson. And, you know, I'm not through. I need to be teachable. Always teachable. I find something new in this book every day. Every day. And if I don't find something new, I'm in trouble. I really am. I live a good life today, and God's given it to me through you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't have found it anywhere else in the world, because I tried. So I'm real grateful to be here, and thank you for listening.